This is special programming from North State Public Radio. I'm Tess Vigeland. Tonight on After Paradise, it's been 20 days since the campfire incinerated the town of Paradise. A flash flood watch has been issued for the entire fire zone as rain now threatens to make a complex disaster operation even worse. Tonight, we'll hear the latest on the threat of landslides from the winter storm that's approaching, plus developments in post-disaster housing, and a look at why citizens can't just go back now that the fire's out. And a money manager who lived through the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina shares lessons learned about how to handle post-disaster finances. We have a dedicated phone line for you to leave questions and comments, and you can find that number on our website, mynspr.org. For Wednesday, November 28th, 2018, this is After Paradise. You've been calling in and letting us know your questions, and for many of you, the biggest question has been, when do I get to go home? The answer is not simple, and it's probably not the one you want to hear. I'm joined in the studio now by NSPR's Mark Albert and Andre Bayek of the Chico Enterprise Record, who has a story today about the decision-making process around letting people back into the burn area. But Mark, let me start with you. The weather is becoming an issue in the aftermath now. On top of everything else, we're looking at possible evacuations for landslides.
There's a winter storm warning that's coming into effect this evening as a more powerful storm arrives over California. There are actually major risks of debris flows. I spoke earlier today with Brian May. He's a public information officer for the California Governor's Office of Emergency Services. He said it's no joke.
If you are in a burn scar area, there is a risk, and it's going to be really difficult to have much of an advance notice just based on especially what we saw down in Southern California in December when those mudslides happened so very quickly. So what we're telling people is if you are in a burn scar area, just make sure that you're paying attention. You've got your phones on. You know, if the rains do get intense, make sure that your phone, the alert device on your phone is turned on. That's an option that you can opt out of. And then also what we're saying is just have your plan ready in case you have to leave your house really fast. The question we always ask people is if you had 5 minutes to get out of your house, what would you take with you? And that includes not only important documents, driver's licenses, things like that, but also enough food and water for your family for 72 hours.
And any specific signs? I mean, would you hear a rumbling from far away, or by the time you hear that, there's no way you can outrun it?
Yeah, you're right. By the time you hear rumbling above you, it could be too late. Again, based on what we saw down in Southern California, they had huge boulders that were moving down the mountains there. Listen, if it comes down to whether you think you're in danger, get out. You can always come back to your house if nothing happens.
That was Brian May. He's a public information officer for the Governor's Office of Emergency Services.
All right. So in addition to that, today, FEMA held a news conference by phone to talk about the current housing situation. Of course, victims and survivors holding their lives together at shelters and hotel and motel rooms. We heard on the show yesterday that this is one of the most complex issues authorities have to deal with in the wake of a disaster like this. What is the latest from FEMA?
Okay. It is, of course, a very complicated thing with many balls in the air. They have inspected sites as they continue to assess where they can put large numbers of trailers or manufactured homes. FEMA says they've inspected 28 sites and found 16 of them good and 6 of them bad. There's 5 with potential. They are continuing to sort of assess based on whether that's a good place for trailers and on also whether they have access to utilities, sewage service, electricity, and how close they are to fire station, hospital, police, and, of course, schools. Now, unfortunately, though, officials said that it's going to be some 4 months before those sites can be built out. But there are a lot of people getting housing nonetheless. In the meantime, the FEMA officials were quick to stress that the financial aid is flowing and people who've been able to secure rental housing have been able to move in. But in terms of those that are waiting for trailers, that is probably going to be a while.
All right. Andre Bayek of the Chico Enterprise Record, you wrote a story about the ongoing issues around letting people back into the burn areas. You know, I think there's a sense in this area now that, you know, the fire is out. Maybe it's time to go back, get some closure, pick up anything that might be left in the rubble. But authorities say, no, it's just not possible yet. those of us, including the three of us who've been up there, can understand why, but describe for us what you found in your story.
Well, in my story, I got to sit in on one of the repopulation meetings that are being held daily here in Chico. They include officials from the sheriff's office, from PG&E, AT&T, building officials, what have you. These officials are looking into ways to make areas that are under evacuation orders safe again. And they're also doing a lot of work themselves. A lot of trees are still coming down in the town of Paradise. Utility trucks are going up and down the street every day.
Yeah, and you know, for those of us who have been up there, Mark, I'm sure you would agree too, that all you have to do is just enter the city and know that it is not habitable.
Yeah, that's correct. There's quite a bit that needs to get done, and there's absolutely nothing left. The electrical infrastructure was completely destroyed, and as I understand it, officials are having, or PG&E is having, a tough time getting in there, or there have been delays just because the roadways have been so impacted. There are culverts that have been structurally compromised, and that's causing some delays. But in terms of getting back to your property and camping out, I don't know if that's going to happen. I don't know if the authorities are going to allow that. That's something that they're still working out.
Andre, when you were in these meetings with officials who were trying to figure out how to repopulate, was there any discussion about how to adequately communicate to the public the severity of the disaster zone? Because it seems to me that there's a real disconnect between what people think is happening up there and the reality of the situation.
There's an ongoing discussion within these meetings of how to convey to the public the work that's being done and how much work is being done. I think that's a great point. I think someone who's waiting to get let back in to see their homes again are wondering, you know, I don't get it. Mm-hmm. These officials know that, and they're trying to, one, draft messages to let people know they're still working up there. There's a lot of work to be done, but also being vague enough to not pin themselves down on any sort of time frame
right, of
when the work could be done.
And finally, Mark, school is back in session on Monday. What's the update there?
It's really unclear what will happen. You have students who are dispersed around the region, out far from their home schools. The schools in Paradise, some of them were decimated. The high school, which still stands, I'm not sure of the utility service there. The school's officials have been working around the clock and extremely busy, but not very good about sharing any information about their decision making. It's also unclear what kind of financial hit in terms of the infrastructure of Paradise Unified School District. Many of the buildings were destroyed in California. The schools are funded through the average daily attendance. If you have schools that have been out of session for weeks now, it's an open question about what the school funding is going to look like for every school in Butte County. Additionally, yes, the schools are funded from property tax. And with the loss of so much property, there's going to be a tremendous loss of property tax revenue as well.
All right. Our Mark Albert and Andre Bayek of the Chico Enterprise Record, thank you both for being with us.
Thank you. It's an honor and a pleasure.
Thanks for having me.
And you can find Andre's full story for the Chico Enterprise Record at chicoer.com. If you want to know why it's so dangerous to go back into Paradise right now, just ask any of the hundreds of people working on search and recovery teams. Brian Vidosh is a fire captain for the city of Sacramento and is one of those people. We spoke outside a briefing room at the Emergency Staging Center at the Chico Fairgrounds. What are some of the obstacles, risks that search and rescue, search and recovery are facing in this process?
Most of the homes up here had septic tanks, propane tanks, in that aspect. So that stuff got kind of covered up in some of the damage. So as the searchers are going around the properties, sometimes they don't see those holes. Hopefully they are using probing sticks, but we have actually had a couple people drop into septic tanks. Tree-wise, we have weakened ground, we have burnt trees, we've had the rain come down on us in the wind. The trees were a big hazard. They're coming down without making any noise whatsoever. Last thing they hear is when it hits the ground. Fortunately, people were vigilant enough. They've paid attention how I've told them to have lookouts. And so they're catching the trees as they're coming down. There is a point during the high winds where we get to a threshold of so many trees dropping in an area, it's time to pull the people back, put them into safety zones or temporary refuge areas until we can figure out if it's going to be safe enough to go back in.
Trees are coming down with no sound?
Surprisingly enough, most people think trees make a lot of noise. However, they're weakened, they're soft, the wood's soft, so there's not really a lot of cracking you're going to hear. It's just the tree failing.
Can you talk to me about what it's like as a member of this team, this enormous team?
So for us in the fire service, it's normal. This is what we're always looking at. When we're out there on the wildland fires, we're always addressing these aspects of it. Yeah, the fire is dangerous, but so is everything else that got weakened by the fire. So for us, we're a little bit more vigilant in it. However, there are times everybody gets complacent. They get to the point where they're getting tired. They're getting worn down, and they just kind of lose their focus sometimes, and it does happen. We've been very fortunate on this incident that we have not had any major injuries. Almost everything's been a minor injury. And on most fire incidents, we would hardly ever document those minor injuries, those cuts, those lacerations, unless, of course, it needed stitching. But in this aspect, because of the chemicals that used to exist in these houses, from cleaning supplies to, solvents were for all the cars, there were a lot of people who liked building cars up here. And so we have all that stuff that basically just became a hazardous material soup once the building burnt down. Once the rains hit it, it then was starting to send it into the streets in that aspect. So we have to watch that and make sure the documentation's, because a lot of stuff, it's not going to be something that may fester now. It could be something that comes down the road. Part of my safety briefing, I try to relate the inhalation aspect with wearing the APRs. I talk about the ingestion aspect, because when they go to eat lunch, they need to get their stuff knocked down and try to get into a relatively clean area. We don't want to ingest it. And the last one is absorption. That's becoming a really big topic in the fire service, that's actually what's getting a lot of us now in the fire service down the road with cancer. We're absorbing the stuff. So it's not really cool to sit there with the black suited face at the end of the day and just kind of hang out. We want to get that stuff off of our skin. Every one of the members is supposed to go through a decon process to get the stuff at least eliminated off their boots and anything that was exposed. They're supposed to be wearing Tyvek suits, so that way they're not getting it on their clothes itself. But we really want to get all of this stuff off the people so that it's not going to be a problem down the road.
Thank you very much.
Sure thing.
Brian Vidosh of the Sacramento Fire Department, who is part of the search and recovery effort in Paradise. You're listening to After Paradise, a special production from North State Public Radio. More just ahead. This is After Paradise, a special program on the aftermath of the campfire from North State Public Radio. I'm Tess Vigeland. It's been almost 3 weeks now since small sparks near Pulga erupted into the state's deadliest wildfire in recorded history. As the recovery process slowly gets underway, we are not losing sight of what fire victims are now living with, which is their memories of that morning. Jackson Cantrell visited the East Avenue Church in Chico this week, where the gymnasium has housed survivors since Paradise burned to the ground. The gym is full of cots and donated Lazy Boy chairs and couches, and people with stories. Among them, 58-year-old Libby Andresen of Paradise.
I I was in the backyard about 7:30 in the morning, and my neighbors started crying and screaming, call 911, call 911. And I looked over and I saw the field on the other side of their house on fire. And I knew our hose wouldn't make it, and I knew there were no buckets, so I ran over there in my flip-flops and my robe with shovels. I'm looking up at the sky. Where is the lightning? Where's the kids playing with matches? Where's the person smoking a cigarette? Why? And then I told Lannan, call 911 now. So he called 911, and he said, we're not coming. Do you know what's going on? He said, no. He goes, get the hell out of paradise. It's all on fire. And then we realized that our fire was an ember drop. We were all worried that that was the fire that would take our house. We got it out, and then it flared up again. We got it out again. And then this huge tornadic orange whirlwind, he just came through our property like a movie. And at that point, my brother said, we have to go now, we have to go now. And we already had five pets and all six people in the car. And at that point, my cat got out of my grip, and she ran away. Paul goes, you got to go now, forget the guy. I go, I can't. So I turn around and I saw her, and I did a 40 years ago volleyball dive on her, just lunged on her, and I got her, and I shoved her in a crate, and got her in the car, and three cars left with six people. And I came down with my brother and my daughter-in-law with a baby due in 3 days today. It'll be due on Friday. Two lanes out, became three lanes out, became four lanes out, became all five lanes out of paradise. So we just went to the left, and we were behind my brother at the time, and we waved at him, follow us. So we thought he was right behind us. So we all arranged to meet at Raley's at the bottom of the hill. So we drove down, got there. Then I got word from my brother that his truck overheated and started knocking, and he's on the side of the road. And people are just going really slow. It was such gridlock. So he couldn't even get the car back out there because it would just start knocking and overheating again because they weren't moving. So he kept his headlights on so people wouldn't hit him because you couldn't see anything. At that point, he had been driving through burning cars and houses on fire. At that time, my nephew was exiting Butte College, coming up Clark Road to come home because the professor said, you guys need to get out of here, paradise is on fire. So he got in his car, my brother's son, and then he had 0% on his phone, he had no gas in his car, and I do not know how he got 1 second to talk to my brother to find out that he was on the side of the road with my mom and the two cats. Nobody would let him in, so he just took it anyway, pissed off a bunch of people, but hey, whatever. At that time, I said to my son, we got to go get them out of there because we couldn't find anyone who wants to go back up there to jump start a car because they weren't even letting traffic in. It was all exit at this point. So my son got a backpack, a gallon of water and 2 quarts of oil and jumper cables and ran up Skyway. So they kind of met at the same time, and Brandon was there, jump started my car, picked up Landon, and then came down to Raley's to us. He had his own burning stories, people running from cars and the like. And one of our neighbors that left said that he was driving, and this is when people were leaving their burning cars and leaving their pets and stuff in the cars. It was just crazy bad. And a lady was running out of her burning car screaming, and he hit her. And she rolled over the hood of his car and hit the ground and got up and kept running. He said it was just a crazy movie, weird, crazy movie scene that he was right in the middle of. He's trying to get her to get in the truck to, come on, I'll get you out of here, but she just running. I don't know what she left in her car, but he said there was movement in there, you know.
Have you had any moments where you've been able to breathe when you've been here?
No, because it's still so pending and so stressful, and the dogs are in crates and the cats are in crates, and everybody had norovirus in front of everybody. It was just a complete loss of dignity. So we didn't surrender to the fire. We're not. We're better than this. We can do this. We're strong. But the norovirus horizontal for 2 days, just surrendering to it. It just couldn't get any worse.
What do you think some of the biggest needs are right now?
Well, there should have been FEMA trailers here. We're getting the FEMA people here with their clipboards and helping us with that part of it. But it just upsets me that 18 days I haven't seen one FEMA trailer, tent, generator, food, nothing. And the money's running out. This is a community-funded church, and it's dwindling. The first day we were getting pizzas and catering and barbecue trucks outside, and second week it was a little less. Third week, we're close to the third week now, and it's just, I can see it, the volunteers are getting fatigued, the stuff is running out, and we got the 2-week notice yesterday, so they're asking what your exit plan is. Have you been making arrangements for your exit plan? What is our exit plan? You know, we need FEMA. At first we were planning on sticking around because maybe there's something valuable still up there, or maybe they're going to rebuild paradise, or maybe our clientele is going to build up back down here. But as soon as we saw the photograph of the house, it was roots cut. That was it. See, we knew it was our house because we recognized the fireplace or the chimney, and we could see through the house to the yard behind. It was all open, and there was a mangled mess of square something in the kitchen that we believe was my brother's file cabinet from upstairs that came through. My mom's stuff, 85 years of life, all of her letters from her parents when she moved over here from Denmark, and photos of her great-great-grandparents, you know, pictures of her dancing when she was 16, tap dancing and stuff. Her parents were in a jazz trio, so there's pictures of them performing in the little clubs around Denmark and Germany. And we had just gotten a freezer with 3 turkeys, 3 ducks, 3 hams, 30 pounds of ground beef, waiting to feed 17 people for Thanksgiving. So where'd that freezer go? We don't have the other side of our life. That was our beginning, and paradise was our end, our retirement. And everything in between, all the photographs and memories, I mean, the memories are there, but the memorabilia is gone. So it's just, I feel lost.
That was Libby Andreessen of Paradise speaking with reporter Jackson Ventrell at the East Avenue Church in Chico. Unfortunately, this country has plenty of experience with mass devastation. From Hurricanes Katrina, Sandy, and Harvey, to the tornado that leveled Joplin, Missouri, to the wildfires that consume the West, there is a morbid history that provides guidance for survivors. Now that the immediate danger has passed in Butte County, at least from fire, if not from landslides, the recovery effort quickly becomes a question of financial recuperation. Jude Boudreau is a financial planner in New Orleans and had a front row seat after Katrina to answering some of those questions.
I mean, for most people, the first financial issue is really just figuring out, you know, where are you going to live? And, you know, when you're living in a city like ours was, and like Paradise is now, you know, when most of the housing stock has been damaged, it's really hard to find a place to live. A lot of demand, supply is super low, so prices go way up for what's available. And just trying to figure out, like, where are you going to kind of put your feet down while you figure out what else is going on with your life and how you're going to reposition everything. Part two is then what cash can you get your hands on? So what do you have in available cash from in terms of banking and other places? Because even if you're waiting on insurance money for homes and whatnot, that money's coming, but it's probably going to take a little while.
So as you are taking care of those two major primary needs, you're also dealing with issues of, you know, for a lot of people, they don't even have ID at this point. And so how do you approach banks? How do you approach your insurance company? How do you prove you're you?
While it's difficult and frustrating, and nobody's idea of a good time is, like, you know, calling the bank, you're going to have to do more of that than normal. Banks have a lot of your personal data on file, so chances are you can verify those things. They also have lots of records of your signature, so you can go in and, you know, complete a signature card or some other kind of affidavit that would state you are who you say you are. They can kind of match that signature off of your previous signatures on account opening slips and checks that you've written in the past.
What about, for example, if you still had a loan on the car that you had? How do you go about finding out whether you can, whether that can be forgiven? I suppose part of that depends on what kind of insurance you had.
For fire or flood, are typically comprehensive claims under your auto insurance. You know, you'd have your vehicle's value minus the deductible on your comprehensive side of things, and that would get you to, you know, be able to have some kind of payoff amount or whatever amount of insurance the company would be willing to send to you. So you're going to need to really work closely with your insurance carrier to locate the vehicle, get the claim processed, and then they would be able, the ones who would provide the payoff amounts to the insurer and then any excess amounts.
Are loan providers and credit card companies in general cooperative in terms of understanding that you may not be able to, you know, deliver a credit card payment? You don't want to be racking up all kinds of overdue fees because of this.
If you've reached out to them to let them know, here's the circumstance that we are in, they have been universally good about working with clients, because ultimately what the loans and the credit card companies want is to get paid back. That's the whole business that they are in. And so they just want to know what your situation and circumstance are. As having gone through a disaster, your memory is not going to be as good as it was 2 days before the disaster. So recommend a 99-cent investment and go get a spiral-bound notebook at the drugstore. And every time you're dealing with the insurance companies or contractors, your loan providers, anything else, write down date, the time, who you spoke to, what their extension was, and what did you talk about, so that if something comes up, you've got your proof and you can go back to it.
We've been talking about things like car loans and credit cards, but there is certainly a population in Paradise similar to that in New Orleans that perhaps those aren't even considerations for them, because sure, they are so low income that credit card and a car loan is not in the picture. If you are in that situation where you simply, you know, you were living not even paycheck to paycheck, but less than that, what are some of the steps that you can take?
This is a time for asking for help, which I know many of us are not naturally inclined to do. But there are lots of aid organizations that are out there that want to help people get back on their feet and get a good start. So we encourage everybody to avail themselves of those resources. Local nonprofits, national groups like the Red Cross and others are going to be around providing services, doing work with people to help them figure out ways to get a new start.
Jude, are there any other very practical, small steps that people can take, perhaps that, you know, your friends found helpful in the days after Katrina?
The biggest healing thing for us, honestly, was being in community with others. I think we tend to want to come into ourselves when we go through these kinds of things. But being able to be out with others who you could talk to, who had gone through the same thing and share stories, was really therapeutic for many of us. I would also encourage you to hold on to a lot of hope for a positive future. You know, it's hard to think about it when you're in the middle of the early stages of recovering, but a lot of good things can come out of the aftermath of these types of situations. Things that maybe were structurally problems and that always had trouble changing, there's never going to be a better opportunity to make those things better.
Financial advisor Jude Boudreau joining us from New Orleans, where the city has survived some 13 years after Katrina. Jude, thank you.
Sure. My pleasure. Thanks, Tess.
And that's our program for Tuesday, November 28th, 2018, 20 days since the fire started. We are produced by Sarah Bohannon, Mark Albert, and Phil Wilkie. The music for this program was composed by Adam Ragusea and Cameron Ford. Special thanks today to Cameron for production help and to KQED in San Francisco. Again, we want to hear from you, your stories and your questions. Leave us a message at 530-433-4887. We may play it on the air. You can also find us online at mynspr.org, and we're on Facebook and Twitter. Tell us what you need to know. Tomorrow, the kindness of strangers, the length volunteers have gone to help a devastated community. Thanks for being with us. I'm Tess Vigeland, and this is After Paradise from North State Public Radio.